From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The changing nature of North Carolina's economy, from furniture and tobacco to high-tech and biomedical breakthroughs, has had obvious effects on the workplace. But what's the role for higher education? What can colleges and universities do to affect social and economic change? Those are among the questions under discussion this week at the Navigating the Global South Conference at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Among the speakers is William Ferris, Professor of History and Senior Associate Director of the Center for the Study of the American South, and he joins us from our studios in Chapel Hill. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Frank. It's good to be with you.
Well, thank you for being here, and John Burness is also with us. John is the Senior Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke University. Hello, John.
Hi, Frank.
Well, we welcome your calls this hour as well, 877-962-9862. What could colleges and universities do better to prepare North Carolinians for the changing global marketplace? What is the role for colleges and universities? What has the impact been on local communities? And does that change the town-gown relationship? Is it fair to expect our colleges and universities to participate in social change? 877-962-9862. Bill Ferris, let me start with you. And first of all, congratulations. You just got back from accepting the Richard Wright Literary Award in Natchez, Mississippi. Nice going.
Thank you.
You also took your place in a line of great Southern writers that stretches from Richard Wright through Eudora Welty and Shelby Foote. And I wonder, you know, you return from that and you come to this conference now that takes a look at the place of Southern higher education facilities and institutions in the global market. And I wonder if you see any connection in the ideas that connect Southern literature, education, and social change.
Absolutely. Richard Wright is an excellent example. He lived the latter part of his life in Paris, in France, and was very much involved in Pan-African movements. His work, his novels like Native Son and Black Boy, are revered and read in every nation in the world. So when we study the South, our rich legacy of literature and music is deeply loved by everyone around the face of this earth.
So as you suggest, this has been going on for quite some time. In some ways, this isn't new, the South's participation in a global economy. Is there anything about this brand of globalization and where we are today that changes the equation and some of the priorities for American universities in the South?
Well, I think the basic pattern is there. I think of our universities as the sails on the ship of state that move us through these waters. And every crisis, whether it's Vietnam or civil rights or civil war, that the nation has faced, and now it's globalism, our universities are the resources that are really our crown jewels. They help us to figure out a way to move through change with minimal stress and to come out on the other side in a healthy and stable way.
And John Burness at Duke University. Duke is working on ways to do just that in the particular. Tell us about some of those initiatives.
Well, I agree absolutely with Bill's observation that there's a long history of colleges and universities thinking beyond their ivied walls. And I think most of our institutions, particularly the research universities, have always had this sense that part of our obligation is to take the knowledge that is generated at our campuses and put it in service to society. And that manifests itself through many things, the land-grant model for this country, which is, I think, unique in the world. And the way different universities work. So we think a good deal at Duke about not only how we have an impact globally. For instance, we're thinking right now about a major global health initiative. But in thinking about that, we're also thinking that one of the locations that we would think about global health is our own backyard mm-hmm. in Durham. So that as we look at a lot of these issues, we realize that some of the challenges that face our society are not just functions of far away, they are also local and how we can have an impact. I think the things that have gotten the most attention lately at Duke reflected an announcement by the Durham Public Schools Superintendent Ann Denlinger and our own President Dick Broadhead a week or so ago about three new partnerships we have with the Durham Public Schools. And we really have many, many, many partnerships. But the three that were announced last week, one is called the Durham Teachings Fellows Program. And we have a strong program in education. Unlike UNC, we don't have a school of education, so we graduate a certain number of folks who go into the teaching profession. But we also know through our graduate master's program that there are a lot of people who have gotten degrees in other fields and then decide they might want to go into teaching, and they take that program. It's widely regarded as one of the best in the country. And we've made a commitment over the next 3 years that 8 students in that program each year for the next 3 years, so a total of 24, we essentially will provide a free tuition, free course of study if they will commit to teaching the Durham Public Schools for 2 years. Our hope is that that once they're in the schools, they will then decide, geez, this is a place I want to stay. Durham's a pretty good place. And we will be increasing, therefore, some of the folks who are really well-trained to be teachers in different fields. The other areas that were part of this initiative was a Spanish language program. And I think most people understand that our state in the last census had the largest increase percentage-wise of Hispanics of any state in the union. I heard some numbers the other day that next fall, 25% of the kindergarten students or first grade students in Durham Public Schools will be Latino. And some of the schools, we have 7 schools we partner with on a regular basis. Some of these schools have gone from 3% Latino 5 years ago to over 40%. Well, it's very clear that the teachers and the principals are struggling with how do you even communicate if you don't, as a teacher or principal, have the foreign language skills. So we will be working this year, this summer, in an intensive program with our faculty from Romance Studies Languages to do an immersion program with sort of rudimentary conversational, but also the kinds of things that parents and the children will need to know that we can train the teachers to understand.
So you'll be bringing teachers and administrators in and do that kind of teaching and training.
Yeah.
So you hear Bill Ferris, you know, what Duke is doing, and these are, in a sense, the effects of globalization on local communities here in the U.S. And then if we look the other way, in the other direction, and particularly if we talk about the humanities, you know, there's been pressure on universities for a long time now to not be so Eurocentric. And I wonder if in this emerging global economy, if that pressure is even greater now, particularly in the humanities. Do we have to change the way we think about teaching philosophy, teaching history, teaching literature, Bill Ferris?
Well, I think we need to realize that we live in a very small global village, and that being aware of international relationships is an essential part, in the same way that John mentions that teachers increasingly need to speak Spanish if they have 25% of their students who are Hispanic. The University of North Carolina has for many years had a major emphasis on international studies, and our Chancellor James Meeser created a new vice provost position for international studies, which Peter Kuklanis holds. And Peter and Nicholas Steiner are putting together a magnificent new international studies facility, which will jumpstart programs that are already doing wonderful work in a much finer and larger facility that will consolidate all things international.
Let me interrupt you there just for a minute, Bill, and talk about where the impetus for that comes from and where the foundation. Do we look outside of our borders to find ways not just to learn about the rest of the world, but about the rest of the way the rest of the world thinks about the globe?
Well, I think just viewing the South, for example, from figures like Thomas Jefferson to William Fulbright to Martin Luther King, our intellectual and political and cultural vision has long been connected to the rest of the globe. And understanding the South, which is part of what I do here at the Center for Study of the American South, is increasingly focusing on global studies. The University of North Carolina Press has recently published a wonderful book called The American South in a Global World that Jim Peacock, an anthropologist, Harry Watson, a historian, and Carrie Matthews put together. That's one of many building blocks that feeds into the symposium that will be here over the next 2 days, Thursday and Friday, looking at the impact of growing Hispanic population, the need to replace old industries like tobacco and furniture and textile, the impact of technology, and how a state like North Carolina and a region like the American South can rise to the challenge, which is coming more and more quickly. John, these changes are on us before we know it.
John Burness, very quickly, do North Carolinians and particularly people in college towns have to rethink their relationship with the gown? And how about the academies? Because in a sense, if you're talking about partnerships, it does suggest maybe a change in attitude on the part of both parties.
I'm not sure that it requires a fundamental change. I think that the knowledge at any time is really a moving target in its own way. I do think that the pace of technology has really changed a lot of things and how people get their information. And I was thinking as I was driving over a little bit about Tom Friedman's book, which everybody seems to have read, The World is Flat. But it's interesting just to look at the books that both Chapel Hill and Duke have selected in recent years for their students to have in the freshman reading thing, where there was some controversy over the Quran. But we had Kite Runner about Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. We had the book about Paul Farmer's work in Haiti. These are things that our students need to know about these other countries and the challenges.
Talking about globalization and education with Bill Ferris, Director of the Study for the American South, and John Burness, Senior Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke. And taking your calls at 877-962-9862. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. We're talking today about the role of higher education in facilitating social change. How do communities make good use of the universities and colleges in their midst? We're joined by William Ferris, Director of the Center for the Study of the American South at UNC Chapel Hill. John Burness is Senior Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke University, and we're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Are colleges and universities serving the needs of North Carolinians? Should they? Should they change in any way to address those needs? 877-962-9862. And joining us now are Jesse White, the Director of the Office of Economic and Business Development at UNC and a former co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you for being with us. And Kathy Drum joins us now as well. She's Executive Vice President of Central Piedmont Community College. Welcome, Kathy.
How are you today?
We're doing very well. I speak for all of us. But let's talk about the effects of globalization on North Carolina. We've been kind of working back and forth. We're looking at the market and how we can prepare ourselves for this global market, and then what those changes have meant already in the state of North Carolina. And in the broadest terms, and the thing I think we feel locally most is immigration issues and unemployment. What's the role for higher education in addressing those issues, Jesse?
Well, obviously, it's in training both the management and the workforce to deal with a workforce that has a very different and rapidly changing complexion. But it's also helping the economic development community in this state figure out what sort of strategic directions we need to take in terms of replacing these labor-intensive manufacturing jobs that we're losing. We have done a seminar series at UNC over the last couple of years that I think says it all. It was called After the Factories, What is the New Economic Development Model for North Carolina? And it's really the intellectual capital that we have in our universities that I think can help us think through the new strategic directions that we need to take in restructuring our economy.
Well, Kathy Drum, is that a new role for especially the community colleges, the idea that you'll work with industry to talk about, rather than simply respond to changes in the marketplace, work together with industry to design programs?
No, that's not a new role for us in the community colleges. We are working very diligently on transitioning persons into our economy and into our communities. Central Piedmont alone provides English as a second language to over 11,000 students per year. And we have developed proactive programs, Command Spanish, for example, for various industries, for those persons that may be in healthcare or in public safety or in a number of fields.
What?
And our goal, of course, is to transition students from that basic English as a second language into technical and pre-college programs so that they might improve their skills and be ready for the workforce.
In some ways, I suppose the community colleges are really the shock troops in all of this change, the first ones to feel the change and perhaps the first to react. Would that be right?
I would say yes.
Frank, I'm actually calling you from the president's office at Robeson Community College down in Lumberton, where I've been, very apropos your question, I've been talking to them about a grant that they have had to take dislocated workers here in Robeson County and put them through an entrepreneurship training program that's run by Real Enterprises and get them starting their own businesses so that worker options are not only for retraining for, quote, a new job, but also the option of starting their own businesses. And it's really been quite a successful story here. They've had 17 entrepreneurs come out of this with five new business startups and expansion of 10 existing businesses. So it's also emblematic of the fact, and our new president, Erskine Bowles, has emphasized this, that the universities and the community colleges need to work much more closely together because these problems are so intertwined and they're so complicated.
John Burness at Duke, talk a little bit about that.
I think that's absolutely right. There are issues that we traditionally have had at Duke, for instance, about a decade ago when, because of changes in healthcare financing, we were downsizing in our hospital and realized we needed to retrain many of our workers. Where did we turn instantly? You turned to Durham Tech, which has been a wonderful ally working with us and with other groups. I do think that there's a real continuum of roles for the institutions of higher education. I think the shock troop analogy is a really good one because the community colleges have a unique and critical role. But the intellectual capital issue is one where folks at our public policy school or in similar programs at Carolina or State or other institutions can bring their expertise to bear around real issues and then put that in front of policymakers so that there actually is data that they can be acting on rather than kind of anecdote and whatever else. And we see that across a wide variety of fields.
But Bill Ferris at UNC and the Center for the Study of the South, that has not been the traditional role of the four-year colleges to find itself engaged in the more vocational aspects of higher education. Would this be a new role, and would it be a wise undertaking to work more closely with the community colleges?
Well, I'm a great believer in community colleges. They teach over half the students in the nation, and their honors program, Phi Delta Theta, feeds outstanding students into four-year colleges and universities. I agree with John that we need to have a seamless, if possible, connection in dealing with problems because we have, especially in North Carolina, an exceptionally rich infrastructure of education from K through 12 to community colleges, four-year schools, and universities. And at each level, each institution brings certain skills that complement the others. And someone like Erskine Bowles is very gifted at weaving together networks of resources. And I think under his leadership, we're going to see an exciting new chapter in education and focusing our educational resources on issues like employment and language diversity and building a future that is based on rapid change that we're now facing.
Well, I know our listeners want to get in on this, too. Let's go out to Kathy from Carrboro. Hello, Kathy.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to, you know, what I just heard about Erskine Bowles and all at UNC Chapel Hill is encouraging news. I'm an ESL instructor in the area who wants to get further professional training in teaching ESL, and programs are very limited for further development for, you know, for teachers to get training in ESL. I know of a program at Duke and State and Raleigh, and that's it at the that I, from what I understand, other than like online training. So there is obviously a great need for English as a second language, you know, on a daily basis, growing all the time, and so I just hope that, you know, I don't know if anybody could answer my questions about, you know, plans in the works to have more programs in teaching ESL.
All right. Well, let's get a response and see. I know, John Burness, you certainly, it sounds like you've got one of those programs, something like that, in the works at Duke.
Well, we do have a program that it's relatively small that trains people in ESL skills. I think the broader question is figuring out how the institutions can take the special talents they have, and at the research universities, that is a very broad grouping, and bring them to bear around these critical kinds of issues. Interestingly, just in the Spanish language last year, I think the first day of the second semester, President Broadhead, Dick Broadhead, went and visited four of our partner schools and came back immediately after that and realized that we have something like 1,800 students, for instance, who are taking Spanish because we require languages, and said, isn't there a way we could begin to think about building into some of our courses the actual use of those skills in translation or other kinds of literacy developments, language skills, for others? So we actually now, as a result of that discussion, have some 60 students that are working as tutors in foreign language skills with children in the schools or in after-school programs in which we're involved in community centers and the like.
So what I'm hearing is that integration is the important, you know, key word here in terms of pulling programs together and then, you know, preparing ourselves for the future. And I wonder if Kathy Drum at the community college level, whether that poses an almost impossible task for you. On the one hand, the retraining needs are so great in a state with high unemployment, and on the other hand, we're talking about feeding students into a four-year program that looks toward the future. Are the community colleges equipped at this time to sort of handle both of those roles?
Well, we're working towards that. We have a number of programs in our ESL that are called ESL Pathways, where students are not only learning English, they're also learning other basic skills, but they're learning them in a job-related environment. In other words, if the student is interested in being in a business program, that ESL pathway will integrate English basic skills and business courses into one program, so they're getting the cross-training in their language and in English as they move forward, and hopefully will come out of the end of that program prepared to go to the workforce with a particular skill and language.
Jesse White at the Office of Economic and Business Development at UNC, is there anybody in the state who's taking a look at all of this and trying to pull all these pieces together, or are they kind of happening piecemeal around the state?
Well, I think a comprehensive approach to this is probably still something in the future. I know just that a university as complicated and decentralized as Carolina, it's a challenge just there to try to wrap your arms around this whole issue of what we call public engagement. The Chancellor Meeser has appointed a task force on engagement at Carolina to work on these very issues, and that is, how do you get a non-land grant Research One university in which the incentives are, you know, publish or perish, and the traditional academic incentives, how do you get the faculty more engaged in the needs of the state? And that's what this task force is going to look at. And there are three committees of that, and it's interesting that that's kind of what we're talking about here today. One is public health, one is education, and one is economic development. So we're trying to address this issue of how we get faculty more engaged in public issues in North Carolina. And I think we're going to come up with some very interesting ideas. We just had a economic development summit at Carolina with about 40 faculty members and about 40 external partners from all over the state, and we had a structured conversation on how Carolina could help meet the needs of North Carolina, and at the end of that we announced about a $100,000 grant program that would fund faculty work in economic development issues facing North Carolina. We've got a couple of interesting projects going on now in the Department of City and Regional Planning. Graduate students are doing an analysis of the value chain in the boat building industry in five of the water counties around Morehead City, so that the economic developers, once they understand that value chain, can try to create and capture more businesses that go into the production of the final boat. And so we're doing a lot of work in cluster development and trying to get more practical solutions to how we can restructure this economy in North Carolina.
John Burness, it did.
Yeah, I was going to say two things. One is, I think they're sort of long-term and short-term issues. In the short term, we clearly have to be focusing in different ways on how we can bring whatever skills and expertise we have in this terrific system of higher education in our state to bear on the very issues that were just mentioned. I think in the long term, perhaps the most important single contribution we can make is by educating people, the students who come through us, who are sensitive to different realities of both a multicultural but a much closer world, as Tom Friedman would describe it, and are prepared to be sufficiently flexible to change because the circumstances are changing all the time. And that always presents, I think, some very interesting challenges, but in a funny way it makes the argument for the liberal arts all over again, that's part of the role of what colleges are supposed to do.
Well, but it also raises the question, going back to the issue of whether or not to coordinate these changes. Sure. And coordinate this integration, and maybe I'll go around the panel, and Bill Ferris, I'll start with you. Is that wise, given, I mean, we should, you know, let 1,000 flowers grow and see what happens, or should, do you think there should be some coordination as these changes take place?
Well, I think we have to make as strong an effort as possible over the next 2 days, Thursday and Friday, here at the Friday Center. We're gathering many of the key people in these various issues to talk about what they've done that's successful, some of the problems. So this is clearly a role that an institution like UNC can play. We're bringing people from around the nation to focus on issues and to discuss them on panels, over lunch and breakfast. So there are ways that we can plant the seeds of change for the future, both in the classroom and through public symposia. And if listeners are interested in these issues, this would be an excellent way over the space of 2 days to get a real focused look at possible ways of addressing the problems that the panelists are talking about so eloquently here.
Well, Dr. Kathy Drum at Central Piedmont Community College, certainly, as Bill Ferris suggests, the idea of gathering people to talk about this and generate ideas and then disseminate them sounds like a good one. But then there's the other question of whether you coordinate that and whether there becomes a central authority that takes a look at how these changes should be take place and really implemented. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, I think, as we have said, we have a wonderful system of higher education in North Carolina, and I believe we can work through those existing structures to help coordinate our programs more closely, especially programs that are offering at the community college an initial gateway to students of other countries and cultures, and to help them transition into higher education, and then more closely coordinate their transition from our colleges into the university system. But I don't think there necessarily needs to be one oversight body.
What do you
in
think,
addition to what we have now?
What do you think now are the most pressing social needs that the community college should be addressing?
that basic transition to be able to find meaningful work, to learn language and culture, and to help transition immigrants into the community and into the workforce. That's our biggest challenge right now.
And Bill Ferris,
and to have the resources to do that.
As you look abroad, are there things that are happening in other universities, other ways, other education systems around the world that the North Carolina, you know, university system could learn from?
Well, absolutely. We had Secretary Richard Riley here this past fall, who is doing a lot of global work in China, in Africa. They're building new universities, and our chancellor was in Southeast Asia last fall, and we are coordinating our efforts here with colleagues all over the globe. Around the nation, Larry Powell will be here from Tulane, who's pioneered the connection of Tulane University's resources with helping minority families acquire ownership of their homes. There are a lot of models of what has been successful that we need to know about, and this is the kind of partnership. We're not only looking at transitioning newly arrived Hispanic citizens, but citizens who've been here for generations.
We're talking about higher education and how it enables social change in North Carolina with Bill Ferris, director of the Center for the Study of the American South. And we have to say goodbye to John Burness, who is the Senior Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke University. John, thank you for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Our program does continue, though. We'll take a look at private universities and for-profit universities, as well as online educations, as our conversation continues with your phone calls at 877-962-9862. On the State of Things, stay with us. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio, talking this hour about higher education in North Carolina. How is it or is it not affecting social change? How might it do more in the future? Bill Ferris is one of the directors of the Center for the Study of the American South at UNC, with us from our studios in Chapel Hill. Jesse White is the director of the Office of Economic and Business Development and former co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission. He's on the phone. Kathy Drum is Executive Vice President of Central Piedmont Community College, and we're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. What should North Carolina colleges and universities be doing to make life better for everyone in the Tar Heel State? And as we talk about these different ways of looking at education and whether or not there are other models, and Bill Ferris, I'll address this question to you. Do universities also have to look at some of the deeper questions involved in globalization when we look at the way college or other countries subsidize education, how they subsidize healthcare, and the effects those are having on their economic development? Do the universities in this country have to play a role and maybe change the way their relationship, not only with the government, but also the public?
Well, I think there's a basic given which applies to a family, a state, and a nation. As your educational support goes, so goes your future. We can see immigrants in every generation who took advantage of education and rose out of poverty. We can see states like North Carolina who wisely have invested heavily in education. And the result is a state, if we look at the South, it stands out like a sore thumb because it has made such progress due to its investment in education. And that is the basic rule. And North Carolina's leadership, its business leaders, have seen in every generation the importance of investing wisely and generously in our schools, and whether it's community colleges or flagship universities, this is where the bottom line is for our future.
Well, Jesse White is director of the Office of Economic and Business Development at UNC. Are you seeing a change in how business leaders see a commitment of public dollars for education?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the breakthroughs that occurred in the 1980s and it began, Bill Ferris and I, by the way, are in full disclosure here, are both native Mississippians. And it started in that poor old state of Mississippi in 1979 when former Governor William Winter passed what was really the first of the Education Reform Acts in the South. And you saw this education reform sweep across the region in the 1980s, and it was based on the understanding and the argument that education and economic development are inextricably related to each other. They're not in two separate stovepipes. That the key to our future economy in the South is to build a world-class competitive education system. And we've invested very well, generally speaking, in higher education. We invested more poorly in elementary and secondary education, and we're trying to catch up on that. But I think one of the breakthrough policy developments in the 1980s was this understanding that education and economic development are so closely related that they're really almost synonyms.
But, well, let me stop you there. I want to put a question to Bill Ferris, and then we can put it to you as well, Jesse, and that is the question of whether this partnership leads to more applied research and applications and takes universities away from the mission of a broader education, more pure or fundamental kinds of research. Bill Ferris?
I think it does both. We have very generous privately funded support for faculty and students to study overseas and in other parts of the region and nation, and no strings attached. Go do what you want. Some learn how to build wooden doors. Others learn how to develop healthcare systems. But they take a broad liberal education into the field and try to apply it in ways that Teach for America does. I think you can't contain or predict where a highly educated student or an institution of higher learning will go, but you can assume that the world will be better for their good work.
I just wonder if does the business community and can the business community have the patience for that kind of thing, or do they need to see a quicker return on their investment? Let me put that question to you, Jesse.
Well, I think it's important to differentiate sort of what the fundamental roles of different types of institutions of higher education, what those different roles are. The community college system has a rich and historic and changing role. The research universities have a role. The land grants have a role. And then the regional universities like Western Carolina, Eastern Carolina, UNCW have different roles to play. And so I think, you know, the spectrum from basic research to applied research fits into this sort of role differentiation in education. Certainly at Carolina, you have a lot of basic research going on, and that should not in any way be discouraged. But at the same time, I think it well equips the students and serves the state well for there to be sort of practical ways of applying their education to real world problems. And we have a lot of programs at UNC that do that. For example, we have a entrepreneurship grant from the Kauffman Foundation that's multi-year that really is trying to equip our students to be social entrepreneurs when they go out in the world and help solve problems. So it's not that neat division, I think, between basic and applied.
Let's go back to the phone. Susan is on the line from Cary. Hello, Susan.
Hi. I appreciate the discussion that you're having today. And I just have a couple of comments. I've taught at a four-year university as well as a two-year community college. And I think that part of the transitioning problem is that our community college system was designed for work placement, for basic skills. And we're being asked in large part, and most of our growth is coming from the transfer programs and the articulation agreements with the universities. And yet the design of the faculty positions hasn't changed. And so although we're generating lots of students with the appropriate credits, I'm not real sure that we are generating the students with the skills that they need to the critical thinking skills and the writing skills to be successful in a four-year program, because our faculty at the community colleges are still teaching 18 to 21 hours, doing the regular committee works and so forth, without the and huge classrooms, online classes, that sort of thing, without the opportunity to spend the time with those students that might be needed. And I'll listen to your comments off the air.
Thanks, Susan. Well, let me put that one to Kathy Drum at Central Piedmont Community College. Kathy?
Yes, certainly she's correct that the load for our faculty at the community college is it ranges from 15 to 20 credit hours per term. However, our average class sizes across the state are about 20 students. So we are very much the first-line teaching institutions, as well as the institutions that go to the table with economic development to try to attract businesses and say, what skills do you need? So the community college is becoming a very not only diverse institution, but multiple missions. One mission is the English as a second language, the basic skills. Another is certainly workforce development. And the third growing mission, as she alluded, is the college transfer student.
And you talked about programs designed to ease that transition and make it a little more productive. Can you tell us a little bit about the programs? How are things changing now to meet some of the needs that Susan talked about, to have students who are transitioning into four-year colleges up to speed on those other skills, those critical thinking skills, et cetera?
Well, we have worked for several years on articulation agreements with the university system, North Carolina Public University System, as well as our private partners, to assure that students have the courses and that those transfer readily. In those courses, we have to meet the same quality standards and have the same credentialing standards for our faculty as at the university level, if it's a transfer course.
I was going to ask Bill Ferris a question now and take a little turn here and ask you, Bill Ferris, about private, for-profit universities. They are now eligible for federal funding. They can get federal student loans are now going to students who go to for-profit universities. And I wonder if they have a role in this, and I wonder if perhaps they're the ones who should be taking the lead in this, and maybe this isn't the role of public universities at all.
Well, I think there's enough to go around for all. I think the community colleges have a way of quickly responding to specific needs of their community. Private universities and colleges. I was an undergraduate at Davidson College. That's a very different dynamic than the University of North Carolina, but they're all doing good work. And for-profit universities is something that's rather new. And this is a new dynamic within this whole system. But the bottom line is that education is the key to the future. And no matter how we're investing in that, it's building a better future. And so I think under the leadership of Erskine Bowles, we're going to see a kind of vision that will build on Molly Broad's fine work here. And North Carolina has been blessed, as we all know, with good leadership and good commitment. It's no accident that North Carolina is now probably the center of banking, and education is connected to that. There are new frontiers of economic futures here that are replacing the old institutions of tobacco and textile and furniture. And this is where education is critical, training people to do the jobs, training leaders to envision something like Replacements Limited, a whole new niche that UNC graduates put together. This is where the creative entrepreneurial skills that we are encouraging with the Kauffman Grant come into play.
Jesse White, do you think that the for-profit universities are a little more agile, they can adjust more quickly, and may move in more quickly to meet some of the needs we've been talking about?
Well, I'm not really familiar enough to comment on that. I will say that I'm always a big proponent of our public universities and our public school systems. I think that's what's really going to serve the interests of the American people in the long run. And I would just like to come back to one thing, Frank, if I could, for
sure.
a second, and that is this question about whether or not there needs to be a grand scheme and a grand coordination.
Right.
And I don't think that is the solution, but I do think we're seeing the solution in the commitment that Erskine Bowles and Martin Lancaster, who head up the community college system, are making to work together. I think the key is to work together, to collaborate, to coordinate. This is a very complicated system with a lot of moving parts, and the more we can work together and coordinate it, the more effective it's going to be. And I think I see that out there in the future in North Carolina.
Bill Ferris, is there a reasonable way to measure the impact of the university on social change, and is that useful?
Well, I think we can measure it in terms of economic development. If we do the right thing, we can look back to the 60s and the issues of race and civil rights that were addressed with minimal violence, and transition was done in this state, taking advantage of all our resources, this newly arrived community of Hispanic peoples. Are a resource to be taken advantage of, like women, like minorities. This is what the educational system does. And I think since we're on WUNC, we shouldn't leave out public radio and the enormous resource that programs like this have for galvanizing support for issues and for educating people about the situations that affect our lives in North Carolina.
Jesse White?
Yes, sir.
I wonder how you feel about that, about the ability to measure impact.
Well, I think some things are very difficult to measure. Some things are easier to measure, and I think sometimes, you know, the things that are easy to measure lead you down the wrong trails.
Mm.
For example, in the area of economic development, creating social capital in low-wealth communities is enormously important, and yet it's something that's really very difficult to measure. On the other hand, the commercialization of intellectual property that's coming out of our universities, patents, companies created, jobs created, those are things that we can measure. So I think it's there's no simple answer to that. I think we need to measure what we can and do a good job of it. Some things are going to be very difficult to measure.
Well, we'll keep holding up our yardstick as time goes on, and I want to thank you very much, Jesse White, Director of the Office of Economic and Business Development at UNC, former co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission. Thanks for being with us, Jesse.
My pleasure.
William Ferris is Professor of History and Director of the Center for the Study of the American South at UNC Chapel Hill. Thanks for being with us, Bill.
Thank you, Frank.
And thank you, Kathy Drum, Executive Vice President of Central Piedmont Community College. Thanks to all of you, and thanks to Kim Glenn at the Navigating the Global South Conference for her help today. Tomorrow we're going to be airing a program on how we as a society value and treat our children. We're asking our panel and our listeners to read several articles. You can stay up on the research with us and, you know, take a look at a little bit of what we're reading to get ready for tomorrow's program. We're going to take a look at how society values our children. There's a lot of lip service to how much we love our kids, but if you take a look at social and economic patterns, maybe not. So take a look at our website. Now, here's where you go. It's State of Things. That's all one word, and you spell it all out, stateofthings.org, and you can do a little homework with us. But if you don't, you can still tune in and talk about how we value our kids and whether or not we're doing enough. This is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.